The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Centre Parks. Families that go here, grow here. The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Centre Parks. Year-round family breaks the weather can't spoil.
Right, our guest this morning joining us live in studio, and I'm delighted to welcome Trina Campbell to the show. Welcome, Trina. Nice to see you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we've been chatting away already, but let's get down to business and talk about all these different things, because you're an Emmy-nominated TV and gaming producer. And you really neatly put me back in my box there when I said to you,
listen,
no, you didn't do it in a violent or aggressive way. It was really clever when I said to you, look, I don't really get the games thing. So maybe you could tell me a little about them. And you said, tell them what you said.
I asked if you play Wordle, because I think you do.
Yeah, I said, yeah, I play Nerdle. Wordle. Sorry. Yeah, go ahead. Yes, I do.
And Wordle is a video game, because that's all it is. It's just games that you play on electronic devices played by a human on different platforms. So your phone, your tablet, your console, your PC. It's a video game.
So I'm a gamer.
You're a gamer, Ryan. You're a gamer.
I can't believe it. I don't fit the mold. See, to me, a gamer is somebody who has the chair, the headphones, and is just whatever that thing is in their hands, and they're just at the screen, and they're, you know, gone to another planet. Like I would be with a book or some, or go when I go to the cinema.
This is true. This is what a lot of people think. But video games are, they're a lot more than that, and they're expanding all the time into different areas. So video games, nutshell, like the Cliff Notes, 1948 was the first patent of a video game. And these were pretty much scientific things that people did. I think the first patent was by the US military in relation to making a simulation of missiles in World War II.
Really?
And then after that, they were around for a while. They were mainly existing in laboratories. You had EXO, which is like noughts and crosses. You had tennis. And then this guy called Paul Bearer came along, and he went, television. I wonder what else I could put on that. And he was kind of like the father of video games, because he made arcade games. We're talking Space Invaders,
loved them
Pac-Man,
as a kid, yeah.
All of those things. And they were really, really popular. And they brought about things like Atari, which was so massive that they actually had a plant in Ireland in 1971, where we were manufacturing games consoles and stuff for them. And from there, it went into microprocessors and color. And you had like console wars with Nintendo and Sega. And then eventually you end up in the 1990s with Sony PlayStation and then Microsoft Xbox. And that is video games in a nutshell.
Well done. Yeah, I feel like I was on the tour there.
There was a nonstop history of video games.
So what they seem to be really advanced now. The graphics are extraordinary. The, you know, people are winning Emmys for music and even acting. I don't know how you act in a video game, but you can explain that. What has happened that they've become so enormous and so lucrative and so smart?
It's technology. Technology has evolved as we have gone on, and animation and the processing behind video games and VR technology and AI, all of those things have changed. But in essence, video games are still about the user experience, and they're also about storytelling. Like 1950s, Donkey Kong was the first time we had storytelling in a video game, where you had an ape who is mistreated by his owner, so he kidnaps his girlfriend, and the video game is rescuing the girl. So we've emerged from that into, you know, other games like The Last of Us and Overwatch and Fortnite and all of these things that you probably see when you see shooter games. But we've also done things like history-based games, like Civ 6 is massive.
What's that?
Civ 6 is like you play civilizations. You get to go back into history and go, what if the Nazis did X, Y, and Z? What if China took over this country? And you play a simulation of how history would have changed.
Oh, that sounds really interesting.
And that's really big among primary school students as well.
What do you think of shooter games?
I think the founder, the original guy who created shooter games, is in Ireland. He has a games company in Galway, Romero Games. John Romero created Doom. It's an experience for some people, and some people like it. But it's not just all video games. It's like there are lots of them.
I'm not trying to be, you know, fishing for some sort of, you know, a difficult conversation. But I'm just curious, as somebody who knows their games as you do, are they okay? I mean, are they encouraging a sort of virulent violence or anything like that. Do you know where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I think it's out there a lot. And I say, you know, it's everything in moderation. You know, I think if you're spending a lot of time on shooter games all the time, sometimes it's nice to have a balance and do other things too. But I think games in general, we tend to see the really violent ones, but we're not seeing the really incredible ones we're also making. Like, I went to this primary school in Armagh with their class was studying Second World War. And their history teacher thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give them the opportunity to build the trenches in World War II in Minecraft. So these kids went out outside of school and they were researching what weapons, how deep were the trenches, how many men were in the trenches, what would they have had around them, what happens in no man's land. And they recreated all of that in this virtual world of Minecraft. And in the process, the amount of information that they got in terms of their own research was stunning. And I think that kind of stuff in
terms of... What a clever teacher.
Amazing.
And a great connection with the youngsters. And as you point out so rightly, that in order to get to the game, they needed to do that research. And so everyone's winning intellectually,
everybody's
technologically.
Winning. And everybody in that classroom wanted to be in charge of no man's land so they could blow stuff up.
Yeah.
So it was really like they really learned their history from those places. And I think we see more of that, this kind of gamification of education, if you want, in terms of how we're teaching kids.
To try and make it more interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. A little bit about yourself, Triona. You were involved with Roger Corman at one stage in Connemara. So we used to go on our holidays there. We'd pass these kind of warehouses, and as younger people have been told, there's movie stuff going on there. So tell us a bit about Roger Corman himself, because I think he's a person of intrigue, certainly his movies. Yeah, and what you were doing with him?
I think I started off as a production assistant in Roger's studio, and I did maybe 3 or 4 features there before I went on to produce a low budget feature of my own, and it was incredible.
The kind of schlocky horror.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's the demon from hell is in the basement. It was always like interesting actors who came over from the States. I think he told half of them, like, if you come to Ireland, you can rediscover your roots. And then he plonked them into the studio with no access to a car, and they really just had to shoot the movie because there was no way of leaving.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant. It was a learning curve for so many people and incredibly exciting.
And got you into that world, I suppose.
It really did.
And give us a sense of your career path then after that.
After that, I produced a kids feature film, which was really low budget and went on to win an award in New York. And then on the back of that, I started working predominantly in kids' TV. I think the first big thing I produced was a series called Sophia's Diary, which was with Sony Pictures International London.
Yes.
And it was kind of a thing because it was the first to go from online to television. And because it had so many, you know, reiterations in terms of spanning books and TV and radio and other things. It was like the idea that you could create a character who was almost like your best friend, who could exist on all these different platforms.
Okay.
And it was interactive storytelling too. You could vote on, you know, little crises in her life. You know, should I go out with the guy or should I study for the test? And then you'd see the consequences, and we'd shoot both endings, and that would be in an episode. And it was really great fun.
Great. And Emmy nominations along the way?
Yes. I was really lucky. I worked with Jason Butler on Collider, and that got nominated for an Emmy, and also Martine DeBarra on Big Girl. And again, that was something that got Emmy nominated too. And then I worked with Robin Ronan Burke on Aisling's Diary, which did 2-3 seasons.
Great.
And so that won back-to-back Kids Screen Awards. So it was brilliant.
And games. Tell us how we go from that to games.
I think we go into the realm of having children and seeing how obsessed they are.
Is that right?
And how many hours they spend watching YouTube and looking at different games and really trying to get into that world. Because I'm a real believer that if you're concerned about what your kids are doing at home, the best way to decide if it's for them or what there is actually to play a game with them.
Clever,
don't
yeah.
just like sit back and go, oh my God, is it too much screen time? Really get in there.
How old
just,
are your kids?
My kids are 14 and 11.
Okay, but we're going back a couple of years when they were just on.
When they were just starting to get obsessed.
And what did you learn from their habits?
I learned that a lot of it was, for my son in particular, I learned a lot was actually about, he was fascinated with coding. How do you create games? And that was something that led us into, like as a parent, into suddenly looking at Coder Dojo and things like that and seeing how those kids are expressing themselves through games. And it was amazing.
The statistics for gaming in Ireland it's worth about 180 billion euro worldwide, bigger than the combined global revenue for film and music. I just find that astounding. 2.5 billion people playing video games on the planet. Over 2 million people in Ireland.
Yes.
2 million.
2 million.
It's a staggering figure.
It's like 200 million euro or something we spend a year on games.
It's extraordinary. It's 240 million we spend in Ireland, which is... So what is the attraction? Obviously I'm missing out because I'm too old now. But what is it that keeps drawing people? Is it just the Jeopardy? Is it storytelling? Let's go back to that.
I think it's partly, if you look at something that was really popular during initial lockdown and stuff, it was Nintendo Switch, and it was it's kind of like a sense of control. When the world was going out of control, you had this little pocket of the world that you could actually control. And for kids in particular, like it's kind of that sense of connection that they had when they couldn't meet out and play normally, but they could be on Roblox and they could see their friends there and meet there and play games or create games. It was that option too of you're not just a player, you're also a creator.
I was flabbergasted when I was called over to my brother and my godson and nephew was playing one of these, and he was chatting away. I said, "Who are you talking to?" And he said, "Oh, my three friends." I said, "Well, they're not here." Like I was like the old man River, and he said, "No," and he was explaining. I said, "Give me those," and I went on the headphones and I could see his mates were going, "Who's I was acting the maggot, but I was fascinated by it, and how, as you say, how you can be connected and disconnected physically, but connected technologically. I mean, that blows my mind.
Is amazing. And I think the thing to remember for parents is there's a lot of resources like Webwise and stuff, which will tell you, it should be people you know in real life. You shouldn't just randomly accept friend requests or play with people you don't know. And that's great. But it's also about a level playing field. There's a really great guy in Kildare called The Disabled Gamer who has a gaming channel. And for him, that thing of putting his videos online of him playing games, suddenly he was the guy who was a gamer and play games in the school, not the kid in the wheelchair.
Isn't that lovely?
And that is amazing.
Yeah, that's really nice. I like to hear about that. And people are talking about a lot The Last of Us.
Yes.
Which is now a TV series. I watched the first, but it's kind of a bit zombie-ish now for me, but it was good and it's doing great business. A text says, "You need to start watching The Last of Us." Last week's episode has already been described by The Guardian's TV columnist as the best TV episode of 2023. It is a wonderful standalone episode which you could watch independently. So I'm tempted. Have you watched it? Are you watching
it? I've watched it. I've watched the first two episodes.
Like,
and yes, and there are elements of it.
It like feels qualified here, yes.
It is definitely a yes, because there are parts of it where you feel like the tension is almost that of a video game. But also, I'll say to you, Ryan, it is a journey. It's an odyssey. It's an epic journey. It's like, Homer's Odysseus. This is a guy with a quest who's trying to get through the end and going through a terrifying landscape.
The ultimate
storytelling.
And it's like, as you say, Donkey Kong, you're just overcoming obstacles to try and get to the end, isn't
that? Yes,
yeah, storytelling.
That's
a great observation. Fascinating interview, says Caroline. Huge congratulations to Triona. I was very lucky to get an early copy of The Game of Life or Death, your book. It's incredible, right? And no need to understand gaming at all. Her ability to cross over is admirable. So that's a nice message. We'll talk about that in a moment. Another said, just read Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Gabrielle Zeevan. As well as being a wonderful novel, it's also a great insight into gamers and games. And the whole creative process, of which I knew nothing. I thought it was all shooters and gore. But now I'm really curious and looking into what I could get into. I'm in my early 50s, so it's never too late. That's a lovely quote, isn't it, from Shakespeare. Now, you, A Game of Life or Death is your new book. Congratulations, by
Thank
the way.
Thank you.
You are bouncing around all these media, and I'm just so impressed. So tell us about the book and how you got there.
How I got there. I wrote a book, like mental.
Yeah.
I really wanted to write. I've wanted to write for so long. And then I was in lockdown like everybody else. And it was, it was one of those things. I wanted to write. Suddenly I had the time to write and I just went for it. And then I wrote it and I have an amazing agent called Marion Gunn O'Connor and I sent it to her. And then I just kind of forgot about it.
Yeah,
and went off and did all these other things, and eventually she rang me and she went, "So that book?" And I went, "Oh yeah, that's great. Did people read it? That's so nice." And she was like, "Yeah," and it turned into a thing, and there was an auction, and Scholastic bought it, and
Here we are. Tell us all about it.
It started with, I was going to a lot of gaming events for research for Gamer Mode, which was an RTE kids show. And I started thinking, God, you know, this is a great setting for a thriller or something, because it's just drama. It's pure drama. For, in particular, but pre-pandemic gaming events were, you know, stadium arenas.
Yeah.
15,000 people screaming, watching these screens, and like teams with, you know,
like a gig.
16-year-olds. Yeah. It was amazing. And I started thinking, wow, what if you had a company that's almost too big to fail, and they have this employee and she discovers that they're doing something really morally dodgy. And what if they kill her to shut her up? And what if her only family then comes and infiltrates to try and find a way to find out what happened to her and to get revenge?
Great.
And
this is combining all your interests, because you like a good thriller. You're a Hitchcock fan, I understand.
Yes.
Like myself. So you did that, some of that come into your storytelling? And you also like one of my favorites. We share a lot of similar loves, including Roald Dahl and Tales of the Unexpected.
I love.
Love them.
Yes.
Hugely underrated. But this, so you're in that world. Is that where you tapped? Did you tap these places?
I tapped into that world and I started writing. And then I went back to college. I did a degree in creative writing. So I was tapping into that as well. Yeah. And also the lovely Louise O'Neill was my mentor when I was writing the books. So she was great.
And she gives you a handsome quote
and
on the back.
And she texted this morning too, which is amazing.
Oh, even better. Wishing you luck, I hope.
Yes.
A gripping, exciting, a story for our time, she says this morning. So that's
she is amazing.
Great, good on her. And good on you for getting that on the cover of the book in time for publication, which is terrific. Your favourite book of all time, among them, is Helen Keller's Teacher by Margaret Davidson.
Yes.
Why that book?
That book was something I read when I was a kid, and it was a really important book for me because my sister was born, she was nonverbal, she was profoundly autistic. And
what's her name?
Keelan Campbell. And she... That book was kind of like an insight into how we communicate without words, you know, the whole process of learning sign language and how you can tap into someone's inner world and how do you communicate. And I think is that something that a lot of people that I've worked with over the years have had that kind of similar background. We were all struggling to find ways to communicate through visual images or things that are other things. And yeah, it was changed me. It really opened me up into looking inside her world and what she was doing.
Because we did something recently on the Late Late Show about love, which is a sort of sign language for people who are nonverbal. And it's becoming increasingly popular so that people can communicate. In your case, with Keelan, I don't know, what age is she now? Is she?
She passed away.
Oh, I did not know that.
No,
I'm so sorry.
It's perfectly okay. She passed away when I was in my 20s. She died a couple of years after.
She must have been
mom.
Very young.
Yeah, she was. She had heart issues as well, and it was very sudden. But she really thought a lot about ourselves. I think, you know, people often say that, you know, having someone in the family is like who's disabled, you're teaching them. But really, she was a person who taught me a lot about the world around and how we communicate and how we understand people.
And you said she passed away after your mum. Is that what you...
Yeah.
Did she predeceased her?
Yeah.
Okay. And that's... that's been a tough old road for you all the same. And I presume that only enriches who you are as a person in terms of understanding and empathy, and that probably spills into writing and life and parenthood or what have you.
Maybe it. I think it does, and maybe that's the thing that you have to go through life to really write about it. You have to have something that you want to say and an experience. And I was lucky enough to have a lot of people around me who were really supportive and great. And in terms of processing, that kind of grief,
Today's a big day for you then, because you're probably thinking of the... I know your father passed away not too long ago, and you were close, and your mum and Keelan and... Yeah, I'm sure you'd love them to be here today too.
I think they are somewhere. You know, they're probably watching and giggling and laughing and kind of going, oh my God, I can't believe she's like saying all of this about us on the national radio. But anyway.
Well, it's a celebration, and it's nice to remember them too, because I'm sure they were very important people in your life.
Absolutely.
And your kids are just embarrassed of you because they're at that age now.
Absolutely. Totally.
If you're going to leave us to the school, leave us around the corner so they can see
you. Oh, worse. I've been asked to go in and talk to their school, and it's kind of like, not my class.
Oh, I understand that world. You're never, says Adrian in Bray, never too old to play console games. I'm 52 and the number of people over 40 playing is staggering. If I was to play one game, what would you think, Triona?
I would say, given your love of history, maybe Civ 6 is a great one.
Civ 6. Okay.
But like, basically, start small. You know, Tricky Towers, which is kind of like, you know, stacking things and blocks and very much a mind game. Or else Mario Kart Racing is just super fun, particularly if you've got kids and you're all trying to beat each other. And you can go, they have a slow version too. You start slow and you build up.
For simple people like me. Well,
and me too. Because we all get beaten by our kids, and that's just how we deal with these things.
Your book, congratulations, A Game of Life or Death, is out now. It's by Triona Campbell, who has been our guest this morning. We're delighted to talk to you, and thanks for telling us all about yourself. And really, I learned a lot today, so thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
All right, it's 9 minutes to 10.